what a welcome to Focus on Politics. I'm Jane Patterson. Just over a week ago, then National leader Judith Collins tried to demote Simon Bridges, but was instead shown the door herself. Enter Chris Luxon, political novice, former head of Air New Zealand, and now, after fewer than 500 days in Parliament, the new party leader. I sat down with him in the office that's seen a revolving door of opposition leaders to discuss his plans and his ideas. He told me his immediate priority is the new caucus lineup.
And at the end of it, I want to make sure that person on person, you know, we've got a better ministerial candidate than the other side.
How do you go about rankings? Because they can often be a cause for happiness or resentment in these situations.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, it's really about the casting of the team and just thinking about how they all play together, but also what they all uniquely bring. I appreciate that people won't always get what they want and there'll be disappointment, but the reality, there'll also be an opportunity to sort of say, hey, listen, we want to move to performance, you know, and make sure that, you know, we've got our best players in the right places, really A, opposing the government, but also proposing, you know, ideas as we go forward and build policy for the election. So, you know, but the cool thing is, you know, I think everyone understands we've done a hard reset, we're getting the party back, and we're looking forward, and we want to really build back that trust with the New Zealand people, and we've got to do that only by demonstrating that we've got competence and got the right people on the right tasks.
Are you going to talk to Todd Muller about his role in the caucus and maybe bringing him back into the fold?
Yeah, I want roles for Simon, Todd and Judith. You know, I want them all in the team because, you know, we've actually turned the page. We've said, righto, we've got 100% trust with each other. We go forward from this basis and we want to use their skills and talents big time. And they've all got big contributions to make to our team. And again, I know maybe it's a different approach, and because I am fresh and coming from outside and given our, dysfunction, I guess, over the previous 4 years, it is actually what I'm here to do, is to reset it and actually build a different culture and to make sure that we actually are building a proper team. And so, you know, it genuinely is a desire, and that was the nature of the conversations over the 4 days before our caucus meeting with each individual person that I spoke to, was, look, you know, are we really up for this change and doing it different, or do we just want to carry on doing what we've always been doing?
Trust goes both ways. Do you think that the caucus can sit alongside Judith Collins or even Todd Muller, given the events of the past few years?
Yeah, well, look, it's easy to say the words, you know, unify, 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 and I've watched even over the 12-month period those sorts of comments being made in caucus meetings, but, you know, that's an intellectual, rational thing. You've actually got to make it emotional and actually get people to reset and leave some of the baggage behind and generally turn the page and be prepared to start again. And so we'll have a series of tests along the way, and it'll be up to us as a caucus to rise to those challenges. The first test, frankly, was having an uncontested leadership transition, because fundamentally that's how the National Party used to do these things up until more recently, and that is the way it should have been done. And so, you know, that was a really great decision by our caucus to be able to do that. And so we'll just work through our issues and as they come up, and we've just got to demonstrate and model it out to each other.
As a chief executive, you set expectations,
yep,
and alongside the consequences potentially. What are the consequences for MPs who are talking the talk to you now?
Well, I think I made it pretty crystal clear in the caucus room about I've got high standards and I've got high expectations, and we are trusting each other to do it different, and either we're doing it properly or we're not. And so, you know, I'm quite confident that everyone's understood the expectations. I also want to make sure that we are very clear with each MP around the expectations I have of them individually, you know, in terms of what does success look like and what are your goals and how we measure those things.
I know you don't like the comparisons with John Key, but in some ways they're going to be inevitable. And I was thinking more actually about the leader and deputy pairing that you have, a business person, not necessarily that experienced politically, although John Key did have a few more years under his belt than you, and also then with the deputy, steeped in political experience,
yeah,
really have that process, that knowledge of this place.
That's,
I mean, is that a model that...
Yeah, very deliberate. So, you know, the first thing I'd say is Nicola and I have known each other for a long time. I actually met Nicola when she was working at Fonterra, and her husband actually worked with me at Air New Zealand, and so we've been friends for a long time. So really that was very deliberate, which was saying, look, you know, as you well know in those pairings, when you go back through the history of the National Party, there's sort of two things I took away from that lesson was, One is you really have to have, you know, the moderate liberal, moderate conservative bits together, and moderate is the operative word there. And then the second bit is really around making sure that we are a national party, that we actually are talking to all people across it, and we ultimately have great levels of diversity and get to all communities. But in the case of Nicola, yes, I mean, I'm coming from an outside commercial experience into this world. Nicola's been steeped in this world in terms of being able to be a political advisor, senior advisor, and knows the processes and the parliament and the protocols, and just, you know, Auckland versus Wellington. And, you know, there's just I think it's a really good chemistry and will be a really good fit.
You mentioned being a national party for all New Zealanders. What is your approach to Māori going to be under John Key? You alluded to it the other day, a partnership with the Māori Party, Whānau Order. However, there have been different attitudes expressed by leaders going into more, I suppose, race baiting in areas.
I mean, we turn the page and we go forward, and what I can tell you is we want an inclusive New Zealand. We are a country that should be very, very proud of our bicultural traditions, but we are also a modern multicultural country that has to look forward and go out in the world as well. And so, you know, we have to have one country, one system, but we have to be able to have, you know, ability to innovate and to target deprivation and inequality through, you know, really targeted, purpose-driven programs or targeted interventions, really based off need rather than ethnicity. Generally, I want to make sure I've got a, you know, we want to build a great relationship with Māori across New Zealand. I did a lot of work in my past life with really awesome, you know, leaders across New Zealand and had, you know, great relationships with them. But we need to connect with them and really listen and engage. And it's always about relationships. I found that in my old life was that, you know, I got to know different iwi leaders, and it was really because we had a relationship, and then we started to talk about transactionally what we could do together.
But do you not then believe in policies or even approaches? For example, vaccination is a very good example.
Correct.
Where there's a valid argument for prioritising Māori.
Absolutely.
At the start.
Absolutely.
So do you believe in being very specific about the fact that you're prioritising Māori or Pacifica or other communities?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we really want to do, I mean, I think the lens of need versus ethnicity, I know there's a massive overlap in that, you know, and when you look at the statistics. But, you know, what I am a big believer on is targeted interventions for people who are doing it tough. In the case of COVID, it's a classic, actually. What happened was the government decided they could centralise and control everything from here. And because they don't believe in devolution and didn't want to do a system where you have business, government and community actually working together on a big challenge like COVID, they didn't devolve fast enough. And you've actually seen the results in the last few months, you know, with the work of the, you know, the Māori community organisations out there who know the community, can get the messaging straight, but more importantly, get the implementation straight.
Look, just coming back, though, it's just when you started talking about, you know, need versus race, then that does go back to brash type language.
Oh,
and I'm just wanting to clarify that you
I wouldn't want people to do that. But what I'm talking about is just targeted interventions where there is challenge or need. And that is really where we want to focus. Well, understand you've actually got to look at it in a two-dimensional way and understand the makeup of where that challenge actually is. And it does sit with Māori and Pacifica, you know, across this country. And so, you know, when you look at home ownership, when you look at education, and so we do need to create innovation and solutions like we did before in Whānau Ora and other things that were actually designed for to deal with those challenges.
And what is your, how would you see the role of the treaty if you were Prime Minister?
Yeah, look, it's a, you know, it's our founding document of New Zealand, and again, it is understanding that it actually, you know, sets up very clearly the, you know, that bicultural tradition that we have, or bicultural arrangements and that we've had from the beginning, but also acknowledges that there's a place for everybody in New Zealand in that. You know, if you think about Article 3 around equality, you know, that's a critical part to say all New Zealanders are equal. So the treaty is, you know, we've put it into the articles and the constitution of the National Party, which was an obvious thing to do, you know. I was a very big proponent of that because, you know, to be honest, all New Zealanders, even corporate world, got there many, many years ago on that point. Māori did well under previous national governments. You know, we generally did a lot of treaty settlements. We had really much a booming Māori economy, and we fundamentally, I think, made some good progress on things like Māori education. But also I'd say to you that the issues for Māori are some of the same issues for New Zealand in general. You know, better healthcare, you know, education, a growing economy, affordability, you know, those sorts of issues are the things that we've got to solve those problems.
COVID, what are the key failings of the government and where do they need to focus their attention as we go into the traffic light system?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I think firstly I'd say is, you know, I think we should acknowledge that it was a pretty good 2020 in terms of how the government handled COVID. And I think it's okay to say, I think we should be saying that, you know, as a National Party. But I do feel like we wasted, and 2021 has actually been a debacle, if I'm really honest. It didn't feel like we were thinking ahead or planning or being prepared. And I guess that's my frustration with the government, and it's really why I came into politics 12 months ago, was because you see all these issues up close, but you actually see a lot of activity and you see a lot of PR and spin, but poor implementation and delivery. And you can't just announce stuff and throw money at stuff and actually not get outcomes. And so I think, you know, when I look at it, I was just thinking about it yesterday. You know, there's a new voucher system that's been announced yesterday. Details in 2 weeks' time. It's sort of in the wrong place. We should just steal the one from New South Wales, which was our proposal. The government, frankly, should just steal our idea. $100 voucher, dine and discover in accommodation and hospitality, because Auckland Hospitality is doing it tough. Friday in hospitality, you know, they'll be on the vaccine pass. All developed way too late. You know, it all just feels like it's on the fly, Johnny come lately, sort of, you know, we're gonna get to it, and we never quite get it nailed. Yet, you know, when you travel, you know, around the world and you've seen other small advanced economies, they do execution and implementation, you know, much better than this. I think things like the MIQ policy is just, you know, it's misery, right? And, you know, the way it was run as a lottery, even today, you've probably got 35 people with COVID and 4,000 hotel rooms. All of a sudden, you can come back from Australia as a New Zealander on January 15th, but you can't do it December 15th. You're trying to work out why. So there's so much inconsistency. The traffic light system, Auckland's in red, but by definition, it's supposed to be built on a logic of we've got our healthcare system under immense pressure. South Island's in orange, and it's supposed to be sort of growing pressure. The logic isn't holding, and as a result, I think the government's lost clarity and has created complexity, and people are finding it very, very confusing as a consequence. And so you sort of look at all these issues, and as a manager and as someone who gets things done, or, you know, and that is where a CEO experience, I think, is quite useful. You sort of understand, well, to de-risk this and future variants that may come our way, why haven't we built or doubled our ICU bed capacity? Well, it turns out we actually have less ICU beds than we did 12 or 15 months ago.
But how do you get that message? You know, you have very recent examples of National Party leaders where the public didn't want to hear the message. Now, it's not necessarily the message, but perhaps the delivery. How do you step that course in a pandemic where people are anxious?
Yeah,
angry.
It's a difficult one, right? Because on one spectrum, you've got people saying, look, can we just open up and get over this? And you get that. Everyone wants to put this behind us. On the other hand, you've got people in an incredible state of fear and anxiety and stress as well. And so it is a difficult thing to navigate. But what I'm talking about here is execution, implementation. So if you're going to announce something, then make sure it's followed through and actually delivered at the end of the day. So, you know, we've had thousands of New Zealanders come back from overseas. In fact, my daughter's one of them, had one of her vaccinations in New Zealand, one of them in Australia. And, you know, vaccine passes will be available on Friday, but actually she can't get one. And there'll be tens of thousands of New Zealanders in that situation because our system can't work it. Well, that's an IT problem, a digital problem. Wouldn't you be on the phone at 4 o'clock every afternoon to whoever's in charge of that project saying, hey, how are we going? What do you need? How do we get that done? Are we on time? Is it functioning well? Has it been well tested? You know, so there's all those sorts of issues. And the bottom line was Singapore had that issue sort of 12 months ago.
So coming back to whether people want to hear it from you, do people want to hear, or how do you...
Well, I think what people want to hear is constructiveness, right? I mean, and so it's not about just beating the government up. Like, I honestly would love it if they took our Dine and Discover voucher system, because it was proven in New South Wales as a really great stimulatory activity for getting hospitality and accommodation sector back. And I spent time 3 weeks ago with, you know, 25 hospitality businesses in Auckland. And, yeah, it was quite tragic. You know, they didn't have clarity on the traffic light system. Auckland opening at red is a big challenge for them. They now got to hire security people to do the vaccination entrance in and out at extra cost. Auckland's going to empty out over December, January. There's no international visitors coming in, there's no international backpacker workers, which is up to 60, 70% of their workforce. And a lot of them are going to go to the wall in February, you know, is what they're saying. And so they're just saying, look, can you just give us some clarity and just execute something really well? Mm. And so I think that I'm not I'm being clear about it, but it's just sort of saying that's the bit that I find is the skill that's missing on a number of issues with the government, is that, you know, education's another one for me. That's been the most startling thing for me in 12 months of being here, is just how we have slipped and not realised how badly we have slipped. You know, we used to be outstanding. We used to be one of the top five countries in the world. Yet we've spent money, but we haven't got the outcome. I don't mean to make it deeply political, personal, but I do think in the Labor government, you have people who haven't actually always run things. And I think that's a big difference here. You know, National knows how to get things done. We are governments of management and good management.
Can you beat Jacinda Ardern?
Well, I think absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I wouldn't have taken this job if I didn't think we could. And I could, because we are going to win in 2023. I think the country is losing its way and it's drifting and it's playing a small, inward-looking game. And I think we need to restore back our confidence and be able to go out there confidently, solving these sort of problems, executing things very well. And I'm very, very confident we can win in 2023.
That's Focus on Politics. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jane Patterson. Mā te wā.